This is Jason Roy. And you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Someone give me a tankard! This is going to get good!
It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show!
Hello, I'm Trey, a.k.a. Asher Gonzalo.
I thought I was Trey. I'm always filling in for Trey. I'm Michelle.
Who are you?
Sorry, should I go again?
Who is this?
This is Michelle, a.k.a. Dave. Filling in for Michelle.
Yes, we have Dave Eatiser filling in for Michelle tonight. So welcome, Dave. So we welcome you to episode 46 of the Neverwinter Nights podcast. So what have you been up to lately, Dave?
Just listen to the podcast. It's all I do. It's what I live for.
Oh, get out of here.
Well, okay. I dealt with my kids, my wife, you know, real life. But podcast's much better.
Well, hey, right before we started, we were talking about your module. I actually played that with my daughter.
Oh, cool.
Back before we went, before I went on the trip to Thailand.
Did you do it with the after I put more stuff in it, or the first version?
No, I downloaded the latest version. Or it said, or when I went to download it, it said, "Hey, don't be sure and get the latest version or whatever." And that's what I got.
Right. And how did she like it? Did she freak out, or was it cool?
She freaked out a little bit.
Okay. Bummer.
Okay, she's eight. She's eight, and she's a girl.
But so, she gets scared of the giant chasing her. Or?
Yes, she was very scared of the giant.
See, I tried to slow the giant down a bit, but then the giant wouldn't even be in the game, so it's
Daddy,
a tough ball.
Daddy, I don't like the giant. Get us out of here.
Space bar, pause.
Actually, I actually recorded our host session. I turned on the recorder and my mic, you know, that I'm using right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And just kind of set it between us, and we just played. And so it actually recorded our host session, so I'll pick a couple of segments out of there that I think are good, and I'll stick it in here so you can hear it.
That's cool.
Like when she gets scared.
By the way, I'm scared. That thing is huge.
The giant.
Well, that's it. Well, now, Michelle said it's, you know, it's cute, so it's like, well, now no one's downloading it. No, that's not right.
No.
So it's a little bit of an 8-year-old screaming.
That was the only part she did not like. Now, she liked everything else. She especially loved at the end when we had to chop down the beanstalk. Now she got into that.
You're not giving. That's a spoiler.
Oop,
what are you doing?
Sorry. I'll cut that out. At the very end when
I
you know
think
you
people
have to
know it, Jack. Cuts down the
you know, at the very end when you have to cut down something.
There. That grew from magic beans. Yeah.
You know that thing. Don't want to give you your spoilers away.
You better run, little boy. Hurry. Go click the beanstalk before he comes. What if he goes down the beanstalk with us?
I don't know. We gotta go down and chop the beanstalk down. But anyway, here, this is funny. You'll enjoy this.
Okay,
so we started out and we actually used a character that we had built and played with another game that was for kids, another module that I think we've mentioned before, the Missing Dragon module. We had played that several months before, and so we still had the character that we had built for that. And so that's the character we used for Jack and the Beanstalk. And, well, it was a wizard.
It didn't ruin the wizard, did it?
Well, I was going to let you know this. When you get to the end and you have to, you know, do the thing.
Uh-huh. Oh, she couldn't,
the wizard,
right. Couldn't equip
wizard,
it. I've had, yeah.
The wizard couldn't use the axe.
Right, so you got to beat it up.
So yeah. We had to throw all kinds of spells on it.
That's cool. You can actually, I made it so that you can hit it. I mean, it won't
absorb.
Oh,
we didn't
that.
Even try that.
You can just punch it because, you know, after scripting so many different things, it's like, you know what? I'm not going to make a special axe that overrides all these different things. Yeah, whatever. You can hit it if you're a wizard.
Yeah. Well, we found that out the hard way. We were like, oh, crap. We can't use the axe.
<That's cool.
laughs> What are we going to do?
That's cool. So she's still freaking because, of course, you could take like 2 hours at that point.
She goes,
still be okay.
Daddy, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I go, oh, here, we're here. Let's throw these lightning spells. That'll work. And then we started using that. And
oh, that's totally cool.
30 minutes later.
Yeah, but so, was she still panicked that whole time that he's coming and the music's still going? Or did
the whole after thing a while gone? When he never showed up, she was okay.
Like crap.
Anyway, well,
I thought of having him actually show up. Which then, of course, that I had to write a whole new deal on what do you do if he's running around in the real world. And
right.
First problem was that axe. Somebody took it and attacked a deer. So then they went and talked to their mom and the happily ever after stuff. And the mom came and attacked her because the faction.
Yeah. I remember you talking about that.
It's like, oh, that's crap. Okay, where are we at?
She enjoyed the fishing. I thought that was cool. Or we both thought we thought that was very cool.
Did you find the thunder bowling?
Yes.
The bowl?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we did that. It made lots of noise.
That was like my last. I added that the night I was. Everybody said there's nothing in the castle. So it's like, oh crap! I got to get something big in the castle. I scripted.
Luckily, we could outrun the giant. So.
Yeah. Well, he's at like 60% speed or something.
Okay, so guess what I did last night?
What? What
did I finished the Neverwinter Nights 2 OC.
No way! I'm so far. I sound like I'm worse than you guys because I just got the game. Like in
somebody else.
Yeah.
To join the club
just at the start of February, and I finally got a machine that would run it. It's like. I haven't gone very far. I made it to I'm a Neverwinter, so it's like that's what 2 minutes into the game or something.
Okay, so yes, I finished the OC. I think like everyone else, though, I did not like the ending. So of course, I can't tell you what it is because you haven't got there yet. So because
I'm like one of the only other five people on the planet that finished it.
Right. Well, there's. Well,
I'm probably never going to finish it. Yeah, I've been building for like 30 hours on the thing at least. You know, I spend a ton of time building, but
I don't play. So
I
finished now, but Jay is not finished. So you, Jay.
So I might beat him.
Who's the other three?
Well, Michelle hasn't done it for more than like it hasn't done it in more than a day or two. So
yeah, but she's done it 9 freaking times. Anyway.
In this episode, we have Gary Gygax. Oh, geez, this is sad.
Yes, but I guess our first news item is kind of sad. Co-creator of the fantasy game Dungeons and Dragons, who helped start the role playing phenomenon. He died Tuesday morning.
I guess he'd been sick for a little while. He was 69. Supposedly, he even was still running gaming sessions in as late as January, from what I heard.
That's weird. I was just fixing to say that.
Really? You must have read the same thing. That's a real bummer. I actually started. I had his book called Master of the Game. He wrote years ago about how to be a good DM, and I had the original 3 booklet white box set.
Right.
That. To like a 13-year-old made absolutely no sense, but hey, we gamed with it. But yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah, I think shout out to Skunking, who we had on the show 2 episodes ago. We did an interview. He's the Grandmaster DM of the year.
A pirate.
Yeah, the pirate guy. He sent that into our news forum. So thank you, Skunk. There is a new Neverwinter Nights 2 area design contest that's been announced on Rob's blog. Rob McGinnis.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And Kaveen gave him some community questions to answer. You can also find that on the blog. And I was reading through that, and I was thinking, we should have Kaveen create our questions, you know, for when Rob agrees to come on the show.
How long have you been hounding him?
For a while. For a while.
He'll come. What you do is you just write one of these scripts you got together for the, just put him in it, and he'll have to show up. Just email him and say, hey, you're in the notes, man.
That's funny. Yeah, so I guess they're going to be starting a new area design contest. Are you going to try out?
I'm thinking about that. I've got a couple things that, boy, though, I don't know how you'd decide when you were done, because that's the problem with Never Ender Nights, too, is you just can keep going and keep making it better.
Top two winners will receive a triple head-to-go surround gaming module.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was until I clicked on that link. That's pretty cool. Did you see what that? Have you ever seen one of those? Link up
three monitors together. Yes, what I thought it was. Yeah. I think actually Jay has one of these. He has just two monitors hooked up.
Really?
At home, yeah.
So right in the middle where he's looking, he can't see anything, right?
Right.
That's why I hadn't finished.
That's a good point.
Sorry, Jay.
Speaking,
I heard they're not doing they're not giving out anything for the other contest they had because of the plagiarism and such.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I hadn't heard that.
I heard they couldn't weed it out.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a drag. I read it somewhere on the net. So hey, I should probably find a link if this is officially a show and stuff, huh?
Hey, speaking of Gavin, I received an email from him last week after our last show, and he included some corrections for our last episode and also some suggestions, so I'll kind of read what he sent me. This is Gavin speaking. I think you mentioned on the most recent podcast that you were thinking of interviewing some of the other community reps, which actually, Gavin actually is an Obsidian community rep, so I need to tell Jay to make sure we invite him to that. We're planning, just so you know, we're planning a, hopefully here pretty soon, another one of those live roundtables.
And yeah,
we're going to try to invite some community reps to that, so they would be the ones sitting around the table.
Right.
Kaveen, and then he said, not sure if you already have it all lined up, but Grinning Fool, who is one of the reps, would be a good guy to get on. I know he'd be happy to do it if you asked. Then he went on and said, also, when you mentioned the idea, you said BioWare community reps. Either I did or Jay did, one of the two. I haven't went back and listened, but he corrected us and said, actually, it's Obsidian, which he's right. And he's actually told me that before. So hopefully it wasn't me that said it. I think Jay said it.
I must have said it.
And then he said, then this is the funny part, he said, and plus keep hitting Rob up for an interview. He goes, it's funny, but you're probably partly right about him just hoping those darn hicks would eventually go away, but they won't, and he smiles. He says, Rob's a cool guy whom he's met in person, which I knew that because he got to play Mask of the Betrayer before anybody else did. And it would be a great time for you and the listeners. So, and he also said, he said, with the unofficial announcement of the NWN2 XP2, which I guess is the second expansion pack, I think we mentioned that in the last episode.
Right.
I'm sure he'll be able to share some exclusive goodies or something. Okay.
Yeah, they said they were finished with it too, but just waiting for whatever to get released. That'd be a drag to have your stuff all done and be waiting to.
I think that's, you know, we were talking to Ossian Studios last time, and that's what they're doing. They're waiting on things as well.
Yeah.
For their adventure pack.
Maybe that's what I'm mixing together, but, you know, I'm not officially a real host. I'm just a substitute host.
Yeah, maybe that is what you're thinking of.
Like that. I'm probably, you know.
Yeah. No, you don't make mistakes. We don't make mistakes. What are you talking about?
I just alter reality.
Also, last week I was kind of cruising the BioWare forums, and you know, every once in a while I'll go out there and I'll just kind of do a search on the word podcast, just see if anybody's talking about us. And actually, I came across a thread from back in January. Hugie from Ossian Studios, actually, he was asking, where have all the Hall of Fame interviews on The Fault gone? And that was the kind of his thread that he started out. And then later down in the thread, somebody goes, it was Meridian. I'm probably butchering that. Meridian. How do you say that?
I'm not going to try to guess that in any of them.
I tried to find a pronunciation, but I couldn't find one. But they replied and suggested that we contact those NWN podcast guys. I thought that was funny.
That's because you guys know all, right?
Yeah, whatever. Then later in the thread, someone said, so how are podcast interviews going to work for hearing impaired? Hearing impaired, sorry. Can't say that very well. Hearing impaired.
Right, you have somebody who could make a transcript of it.
Yeah.
Somebody's got some software to run it through, right?
Well, I don't know. That would be a lot of work. But well, yeah, that's what we would have to do, because if
somebody had one of those, actually somebody that's hearing impaired might have some good software for that, and you run it through as an MP3, and it should pop out at least some of it in decent form, and then you look it over. And
well, I do know that I did do a search after I read this. I did kind of do a search on voice recognition software, and there I did find some open source software that was out there. It seemed pretty complicated, though.
Well, my only experience with it as a writer, I thought, oh, this will be great. I can just talk into it, which, of course, that's a whole other story why that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But you had to train it. So you read at the back of the back copy of DVDs or whatever you can get a hold of, so it can learn your voice. And I did Apollo 13, and it says mission control, right? Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Well, it puts it up there, Michigan troll. Which, of course, if you say over and over, is the same word, I mean, phonetically. But it's like, why would it know that people in Michigan call people that live south of the bridge the trolls? And it's like, but anyway, so that'll be cut out. Mission control.
That's funny.
So you have to have somebody sort through it and get rid of all the Michigan trolls. And
So if anybody out there would like to take our podcast and transcribe them for us, let us know.
Yeah, give them a nice blurb, and
we'll give you a T-shirt.
There you go. Do you have them?
We're working on them.
There you go. Cafe Press.
Yep.
So changes to the Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2 modules of the year list. Yeah. Why was Bishop's Romance removed?
Yeah, I was looking through there. That's my question. I put that in the notes. When I was reading that,
I'm host too.
Do you what?
I'm host too.
Oh, right. Understood.
That's my line.
Well, anyway, when I was reading through that post, I noticed that Bishop's Romance was gone. It wasn't there anymore.
Hmm.
Or actually, I guess it tells you that they removed it, but they don't tell you why. In next episode, we're going to have Domo Soto, is how you say her name. We're going to have her on as an interview, who did that module.
You think maybe she pulled it? Huh.
Well, when I went to look at it, I looked it up in the vault, and they had made some changes to it.
Oh, after the date or something?
In January of 2008. Right. So that might have been what pulled it out. I don't know.
Although I thought changes in 2000... maybe. Who knows?
Because this is for 2007.
Yeah. She might know.
Yep. Actually, I think Michelle's...
Stay tuned.
Actually, I think Michelle has been trying to contact her. Well, no, they've had the interview done for a while.
Okay.
And we're just going to air it next episode. Not this episode.
Through the magic.
Right.
The magic of podcasting.
Yeah. So I don't know if we'll find out why, but if Michelle does, we'll let you know.
And what do you got here? Rumors, Sony CEO going to Atari. Does that mean life for Atari?
Might be.
Although Harrison made no comments about his future plans, Joystick, is that?
Yeah, that's a website. That's a gaming website.
Okay. That's cool. Joystick has reported a rumor that he will be moving to take the helm at Atari. The troubled publisher is attempting to turn itself around in the face of ongoing losses and layoffs. is that a no kidding?
That's no kidding.
Yeah. And was recently reported to be looking for a new CEO. Well, that's cool. That's good news.
Yeah, so maybe Atari will he'll turn Atari around.
Do rocks bounce?
They do now.
Announcing the bouncy rock. Oh, I know what this is. Yeah. I'm in the loop here. I read something about this. It says, announcing the Bouncy Rock Entertainment development team with two modules in development. The Misery Stone and...
Stygius.
The Prelude. See the new Bouncy Rock logo at...
BouncyRock.com.
Yeah, that's, I guess, Johnny, her group that was doing...
Stygius.
Yeah, doing Stygius. Yeah. Linked up with the other group, but actually that's going to put Stygius on the back burner for a bit, is what I heard.
Right. That's correct. Jason Roy, Johnny Lee, and Michelle, I think are really the only three working on that heavily. I have helped, well, and Jay has as well. I helped write a few quests for Stygius. But like you said, yes, they are putting Stygius on the back burner and
working, so how does that
working
make you
heavily
feel?
On Misery Stone.
So are you bummed because it's going to be longer till you see Stygius, or you're all right with that?
I'm okay with that.
I think it'd be pretty cool. More people working on everything.
Yeah.
Should be good. But that's quality's cool. Always good.
Right. That's cool that they've announced a new development team called Bouncy Rock.
Yeah.
So everybody check that out. Okay, the next... We have lots of stuff to talk about tonight, so we're only about halfway done. I wanted to make a pre-announcement. If y'all remember, we had Skunk, a.k.a. Skunkine, on our podcast a couple episodes ago, and which was a quite entertaining interview to do, actually. he's a very funny dude.
It was fun to listen to.
Anyway, he is planning, and we talked about him planning some DM'd events for us, much like the way that we did... the Galesburg contest, and we had some events, which actually we still have one more pending event on that. I don't know when that's going to happen, but anyway, Skunk has decided to plan a number of events planned around several game worlds. So I just actually got an update on him right before we came on to start recording this. So in March, what we had planned tentatively for maybe March 23rd or possibly the 22nd, because 23rd might not work for me. At the Realms of Anacola Hall of Fame Gaming World, he's gonna try to do an outer space spell jam adventure with a trio of DMers, a trio of dungeon masters, Skunkine, Carissa 1066, who is a 2-time and recent Grand Hall of Fame Neverwinter Connections player of the year, and Barry 1066, who is a team member of the Community Expansion Pack. And a Neverwinter Connections Grand Hall of Fame Dungeon Master, and we're going to try to open that one for like 6 to 8 players.
That could be really cool.
Yeah, when it gets better.
Uh-huh.
And then the second one that he's planning, there are no dates for this one yet. Of course, we'll post them on the website once we finalize the dates and times and everything. He's also planning an event over on the Persistent World. All of these are going to be on Persistent Worlds, by the way. Aria is how you pronounce this Hall of Fame game world, and then we'll include links to all of these in the show notes as well, so y'all can go check them out. Actually, when I talked to him first, he said he was going to have a meeting with them to see if they could do the event that we talked about in the interview, where you play with the time shifts.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah,
they're possibly going to try to do that on that Persistent World again. And he's going to have the lovely and magical Dungeon Master Maestra with him to do some interactive role-playing Dungeon Master.
Oh, that's cool.
And I guess the story will be two parts through time and destruction of the Forgotten Realms.
And is this Neverwinter Nights 1 or Neverwinter Nights 2?
These are all Neverwinter Nights 1.
Excellent. Yeah, I haven't done DM client for number 2 yet, but number 1 is awesome. Have you ever tried that?
Have I ever tried DMing? No, I haven't.
Yeah. Oh. Jump in. Try.
Third possible event that he's putting together, It looks like he's been talking with Carlos One, who we've had on the show before, who is the Dungeon Master Friendly Initiative CEO, creator. They're going to try to showcase one of the DMFI modules that are designed to quickly get you into a role-playing action, and they'll both be on hand after the event to speak with any new would-be dungeon masters and how the DMFI modules and tools can quickly get you into running your own Dungeon Master event.
Yeah, that's DMFI has that DM 101 mod, which is right. An awesome deal too.
And in April, we could have. He's still planning these events out, but we could have a co-DMing event with Megalith, who is the head of the CCP project at the World of Caridor. That's the content creature project.
Oh, right, right.
We've actually mentioned that in an episode before. And another possibility is Moon Sea Nomads is a persistent world that is hosted by Chris
Fowler. I think that's Moonshay, isn't it? But anyway, isn't that Moonshay?
Okay, Moonshay Nomads. It's not Moon Sea?
I don't know. I know that Forgotten Realms has Moonshay, so... I always when you read something and you always read it as what you think of it in your head, and then you hear somebody that's official and knows what they're saying says it another way. And so I have heard it called Moonshay.
Okay.
But
we'll go with Moonshay.
There you go.
Which is hosting Chris Fowler's Pool of Radiance module.
I think that's called Radiance.
Oh, it is not.
Okay. Go on. Continue.
So they may let him do an event over there. Actually, he says that that's a new server that's kind of struggling. So it might help them out if it gets some advertising. And then a third possibility is the Gatecrashers Persistent World, and that's all I know about that one. So when we have the dates for all these, we'll post them on the website and in the forums, and of course we'll announce them in the episodes. And I'm actually still finding this out, but you may have to submit your character's stories, alignment, race, and all that stuff.
The skunk, so he can do it first
before the event starts. Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
well, the more information you can give the DM, the better. I mean,
oh yeah,
it's amazing just to tailor it to the. That's. Well, you guys, you didn't have any pen and paper experience, right?
No. No, I haven't.
Yeah. So this is kind of, that's what it is. It's like pen and paper. It's wild. I get the feeling he likes doing this.
Oh yeah. He got really excited.
So, what's this? You got a shout out? You gonna make me pronounce something?
Go ahead.
A shout out to Barra, aka Eric Carlson, on his new blog, www.barra-nwn.blogspot.com.
Yep, I thought we'd give a shout out to that. Barra's launched a new blog website. And if you don't remember, we had him on one of our episodes for an interview. He's the guy who does all the horror modules.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think I went, searched around farther, and he did some movie stuff, too, didn't he? See any of that? Yeah.
Yep.
Good stuff.
So this episode we have about an hour's worth of the live roundtable that Michelle and Jay hosted while I was gone on my trip. Were you able to?
Oh, I actually got to drop in on some of that.
Did you drop in?
Yeah, I totally. Well, life came in and I missed the start, and then I dropped in kind of late. But it was going pretty good, I guess. They said they had a little problem right at the start. That was probably Skype's problem. But when I was there, everything was running really good, and everybody was asking good questions. So it should be a lot of fun.
So we have about an hour of that, and sit back and enjoy.
And I'll unmute my mic to come back and do my little spiel, and then we will start with the topic. And I guess we'll just do it in the order of the chat list of the people who are actually part of the round table. And go, Johnny.
Hello, everyone. I'm Johnny Ree, and the project manager of the Stygus project.
I'm Duncan, also known as Wirin on the forums. I've been modding about a year now. My current work is the Dark Avenger series.
Hi, I'm Ernie Nella, and I've done a few modules. I've got a module in progress called Hytham. It's a rework of something that I put out for Neverwinter Nights 1.
Hey, it's Eva Almeida calling from up Great White North. I've been modding for, say, about a year, maybe a year and a half, helping Jackie with his module, Nighthawks in Nestlehaven, and working on my own module, A Time to Die, for quite a while. So I'm hoping to finally get it done with the help of the Gaming Parent Studio team. And I'll maybe talk about that a little bit.
Kevin, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. This is Kevin Costa, also known as Delic. I've been working on a module called Idols of the Rat King for about 3 months now, so I'm pretty new to building a module. Never did one, and never won Tonight's 1, so I thought I'd start one and never knew Tonight's 2.
I'll answer. Next, please.
Alright, hello. My name is Ethan Meener, calling from up in Canada, and I have been playing with Neverwinter Nights for quite a while since Neverwinter Nights Fun back in 2003. Never really finished anything with that, and so now I'm on to Neverwinter Nights 2, working on my current project, the Northwinds Trilogy, and I hope to actually release it this time. Thank you.
Okay, hello, my name is Brian Lewandowski, a.k.a. Rafe Beltran. I've been modding since Neverwinter Nights 1, but never really released anything until Neverwinter Nights 2. That's the beauty of PWs, I never finished. And currently working on my Soul Build series and trying to finish that up.
Okay, Ronnie, you want to go?
Trying to go on it.
I think Ronnie's having audio difficulties.
Guys, and listen to you later. Nice to meet you. Thank you, Ronnie. I am so sorry you're having so many problems. Take care. Get some sleep. That's okay. I thought it was I wasn't sure if it was a girl or a guy. He had to clarify it for me.
Yeah, I think that's the Ronnie and the Ronettes version you spelled there.
Okay.
Are you going to? Oh, that you're going? Oh, geez.
No audio. Mike is dead. Oh, crap. All right. Well, I know Jay's not in here yet, but let's go ahead and we'll try to salvage this. You want to go ahead and start, Johnny, with pop off your first topic, and then we'll just go around the table and discuss the topic that each person brings out, and then we'll move to the next one. I do have one topic starter for myself, and I'll do it at the end. And go, Johnny Ree.
All right. Well, I'm wondering, I've been starting and playing around a lot with the tool set and have found plugins to be a great addition to this. So I'm wondering what sort of plugins, if any, are people using around for the tool set. Anyone want to share that?
I've got one. This is Ernie. I was using, when I first got started and was still trying to figure out which end was up on the tool set, I was using, I want to say it's NW Mapper, and I'm on the ball trying to look for the name of this thing, and it was absolutely fantastic, and then it wasn't supported past patch 1.4, I think, but I read that someone else has taken over and they have it out there. Basically, you just draw what you want, and then it lays the tiles out for you.
If you're
just getting going, it's great, you know, to cut down on the build time if you're just getting going.
You're absolutely right, Ernie. I think it's a NWN2 mapper, and if it wasn't for that, I would have been completely lost from the get-go. Replugged picked it up, and they do kind of carry on with the patches, but that is an invaluable one, I think.
I use that one also.
Yeah, me too. They get excellent help.
Well, there are several I've noticed as well. I'm trying to go through the Voltaire to see which ones I were referring to, because at least there's one from Grinning Fool that makes it a lot easier to paint terrain and exterior lands and so on, that makes it very accessible to change textures, to build using the brushes, change choices of the brushes as well as intensity and all that just by using menus and keyboard settings. There are also a few that makes it easier to control the camera. Oh yeah, excellent. The Grinning Fool's usability tool plugin. That was truly the plugin that I found to be most useful, because that just speeds up the entire process of doing external areas.
This is Kevin. I also use PowerBar a lot.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that.
PowerBar, what does that do exactly?
PowerBar gives you a few different menu selections for scripts, creating new areas, searching through scripts. It also lets you, when you first start the tool up, to have a list of the different modules that you're working on and be able to open up right when the tool starts up.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I'm using that one as well, if I just didn't remember the functionality under the name.
I use it to browse voices and music and sounds. Like, you can browse really quickly when you want to pick a perfect voice for, you know, an NPC and that. So, as well as creating blueprints, too. It's good for that.
Two that I don't presently use, but I'd like to, and they look interesting, are Terracappa and Watermill. And as far as area design, those two look like the most versatile plugins. I don't know if anybody here has actually messed around with them at all.
I've messed around with Terracappa before. They work pretty well.
I read through the documentation on Watermill, but didn't take the plunge.
Yeah, it scared me that if I used it, as cool as it would be, I'd be one patch away from being completely broken, so that's what kind of turned me off. I wasn't sure where I'd be left in that.
The other one I use is InCharacter, because I create sometimes the companions or NPCs, like, using the game, like, created, and then you can convert it into a player, not into a player, like, you create a player, and then you can convert them into a companion. It works really well because then you have all the proper feats, all the proper stats.
That's a nice one. Which one is that one again?
It's called InCharacter. It's on the vault. I just can't remember. I didn't use it until just recently when I was doing the new prestige classes that I'm adding to all the companions. I wanted to make sure all the feats. That's Matt's the prestige classes that he's doing. So. It works really well for that. As long as there's one thing that if you don't do it properly, it wrecks it. And it says you have to have an import option of create items blueprints. Sometimes if I don't, it kind of crashes on me, the blueprints. But if I choose that option.
I was going to say, I'm not a very good proofreader of my own material. But I use SpellPlug. And I couldn't get by without it.
Yes.
I'll have to second that one.
Wish I'd have used it.
If I could interject for a moment, anybody listening who is not in the chat room and not on my list, please add me to your contact, LISO_NWNP, and I will add you to the text chat. Thanks. Hey, Duncan, do you have a topic?
Yeah, sure. I managed to dig up the ones I sent across. One of the ones I was going to ask was about balancing for different classes, because I rarely play a straight rogue when I'm playing Neverwinter Nights. So I'm always slightly worried that I'm missing out on putting something in there that rogue people that play rogues might enjoy. So I just wanted to get people's thoughts on that.
Well, that's a rather difficult one as well, because I don't really play rogues either.
I don't play them, but I have a companion that's a rogue, and so, you know, I'm trying to incorporate some things that a rogue would playing it would enjoy.
I normally play a bard character, so I like to try and focus more on the putting in a perform check or something like that. or more dialogue options.
I try to include a lot of checks, you know, when I can or when it's appropriate, and I always have the mindset, I'm an old paper and pencil player, and whenever I'm writing stuff, I'm always thinking of the ideal well-balanced party with at least four characters, you know, the four main archetypes from first and second edition rules, if you go back that far. So I've always got that rattling around in my brain, and tried to include companions to make sure that the player can have a balanced party as they go through it.
Mm-hmm. I tend to play rogues a lot. The tough part about incorporating a rogue is you're never sure. You want to make it so a rogue will be beneficial, but it's not a deal breaker if you're not or don't have those skills. And then with the default death system, traps are pretty much worthless because it might kill off one of your party, but they instantly respawn back. So it's kind of hard to cater to the rogue class and make it beneficial.
Yeah, that's a good point right there.
All right. Get another topic rolling. This is Ernie. What kind of challenges have you faced in your current project, current module you're working on? How are you overcoming those?
It's hard to know who to start here. Currently, I'm actually doing a lot of custom content, so I'm trying to figure out with the Granny plugin and doing animation and all that, and figuring out how to make animation appear more interesting rather than just having characters standing around bobbling their heads and just putting their hands in the air sometimes. And it's rather challenging that I'm not quite sure if a lot of people can relate to me there to figure out that, because I don't know how many are actually trying to do custom animation. how about anyone else? Any other issues?
Well, yours definitely dwarfs mine by comparison. I can't even really keep up with the animation. What gets me is completion anxiety, getting to the very end of something and not really having the ability to balance the combat. I'm not a very good numbers person, so knowing whether the encounters I put in place are going to be challenging yet passable for everyone, I just move on to the next module and leave the one before almost done.
Before we got started, a number of people were talking about crashes. I'm sure that's aggravating for everyone when that comes up. But you mentioned completion. The closer I get to completion, the harder it is for me to put the darn thing down, to the point where it's almost unhealthy. It becomes an obsession, and I just can't stop working on the thing. It's very hard for me to put it down and walk away from it when I should. And that's something that I struggle with.
I wish I had that problem.
So many times have I had crashes and lost, you know, work. Not funny. And I almost gave up recently because I had had enough of 20 crashes in one day trying to bake an area that I was just trying to send to the rest of the team to see what they thought of. And luckily kind of encouraged me to not quit. But it's very frustrating when you keep trying and trying and trying. And luckily, EC found out that it was just I had a bunch of placeables that weren't environmental yet, and it was just too much memory. So convert your stuff to environmental if you have a big town. So that's what I learned from that.
I've heard directory mode really helps that, too. I'm still save five versions of a module and stay in module mode just to be paranoid about backups, but I've heard directory mode takes away a lot of that crash on bake.
Yeah, I was working in directory mode, but I agree with you. It did cut it down a lot, but it still happened. But luckily I fixed it, and it's working now. And so, but that was very frustrating. My number one frustration, other than trying to learn how to script. My second frustration.
I've actually had an issue with the module, or actually the editor, deleting my directory when I close the editor, which is rather annoying when I have custom files in there. So I have to keep a back. I had to, at the point, keep a backup of all my files elsewhere, so I could put it back and recreate the directory, which became a little bit of pain. I don't know if anyone else has had that problem, if it's just me.
No, I've had it too. Yeah. I try to save as module and then go back and save as directory, so I have a backup in a module. Just have like three or four backups now.
Right.
Yeah, I've got a whole host of backups. I make them obsessively.
Yeah, same here. I back it up every time I open up the tool. Looks like I'm next for a topic. The question I have for everyone is, do you have any tips on creating a campaign, naming conventions for the scripts, or naming conventions for the areas, the placeables, that type of thing? As I keep going through my module, I'm having difficulty trying to identify or naming the doors, the area transitions, and the scripts to make sure that they all work correctly.
I think that's a great question. I don't know that I have a very good answer. I program at work, and I use naming conventions religiously there. And I find that, you know, when I'm working at home, it's a little more haphazard. And usually by the time I get to the end of a project, my naming conventions have evolved. And that carries over to the next one, but I don't think I've settled on something that I really like.
I was just going to say, for doors, I tend to use, at the end of it, I'll use underscore U for going up or underscore D for going down, and either put it on a 1 or a 2, depending what floor we're on as well. And sometimes I use north, south, east, west, just tacking that on the end as well to help me get a feel for where the transition's going.
In a follow-up to that, is there a length issue? I heard that 32 characters was the max you should go on naming something.
I'm not sure if there's a length issue, but keeping it short and having the fear of tags and resrefs and NWN1 definitely helps. What I do is I try to divide the areas up into logical area logical divisions, then use a three-letter prefix, underscore the area, and then underscore, and then an FT for front, BK for back, ones and twos for multiples, the north, south, east, west thing. Keeping it short and keeping it notation I think really helps.
And for me, with conversations, if I know a conversation, like you said, for campaigns, companions are always campaign conversations, so that, you know, the carries over to the rest of the module, and, you know, just things that are going to be, you see, happening in multiple modules, I'll keep under campaign. And I'm just learning, because I'm just doing a campaign at the same time as learning how to do the modules, and that's what I've learned. I know, very simple, but took me a little while to figure that out.
All right, well, I had to kind of think to come up with anything, but I guess my question is, of course, to come up with a sort of interesting story, the player has to have a big role in it, which is sort of the point. And my question is, what do you think about how much of the player's history should be predefined for them? Because, of course, the player likes to choose, you know, they like to create their own character, but it's a lot easier to involve them in the story if you have, you know, something about their history to begin with.
Personally, I believe it depends on the story you are wanting to tell. I mean, this is a story where you want the player to have a huge influence as to how the game progresses, or is this more of a story you want to tell for the sake of telling the story? It is easier to take a bit out of the story and give people and try to tell them a previous life or whatever. I'm actually not quite sure where I was going with that. I have it very clear in my mind. But I can see how it's a bit of a problem to balance it, because I mean it's hard to give a player too much freedom and end up with a great story to tell as well.
I tend to not define the background of the player too much, but I've played some modules where that's been done, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. Duncan/Wyron, the Dark Avenger module he's got out, you're kind of defining your background as you're moving through it. It was one of the most fascinating things I played in the last 6 months. It was really great. a module I put out, Tamak, and I didn't give you a lot of background, but I kind of put you in a situation that just happened that you don't have a real clear memory of, and you kind of had to respond to that, and that drove the plot forward. That's probably the most that I've really defined the background, is I put you in a situation that you've had to wade through.
I can sort of see why, because, I mean, it is difficult to assume that the player knows anything about this character you put him in. So you have to, if you have a background story for this person, you either have to give him a rather bad memory or someone to explain it, or, well, just have him relive parts of it through dialogue or through things like that. It's happening, yeah. I'm stopping now.
Interestingly enough, I'm using all three of those approaches in my current project, to some degree or another.
What I always thought would have been clever was give them the option of selecting a background feat and then having certain histories based on the background feat, just, you know, wherever they start, and then also having the option of not having a background feat and leaving them a clean slate to determine their own background, because nobody wants their history written for them, or maybe some people do, but I always thought that'd be a good idea, but I just never really followed through with that.
Yeah, they did something like that in Mass Effect, I think, where you choose one of three background stories at the beginning, and then they get referenced throughout the game.
Hi, guys. I'm going to jump in for a second. Once again, if you are listening and you want to be in the chat room, you need to add me to your contact list, LISO_NWNP. Thank you.
Okay, I guess the next topic's mine, or the next question, if you will. For those who were around in the Neverwinter Nights 1 days, and even those who weren't, how do you think the community has evolved, although it's been whittled down? How do you think your search for answers and stuff have changed? I mean, is the forum still the number one place you go to look for something, or have there been additional resources with blogs and podcasts and all the other new media?
I usually use the Dynamic Knights community rep IRC Cal for all my questions and such. I do go onto the forum and search for answers, but usually I find it easier to get answers through there. Because, there are so many skilled and so many knowledgeable people that are just lurking on that channel, and you usually get a answer really quickly for whatever you need an answer for. When it comes to finding information about modules as a from a player's perspective, I actually find myself going more to people's blogs than actually going through the vault, as I did through the Knights 1 project. I still find a lot of information through the vault, however, other than going and checking out plugins and so on, I find players' websites, and builders' website rather, to be more informative through blogs and links.
Hi, this is Kevin. Being a new module creator, I use the community often, specifically the forums, especially when I'm creating new scripts, as I have no scripting experience whatsoever. So I go there, I post all the time, and I usually get a response back within an hour, and I usually have an answer to my question pretty quickly. So I use it extensively.
I post both on the forums, and I also post on my blog. I always get really helpful responses very quickly. I am amazed at how much people are willing to share and how much time people are willing to put in to help you solve a problem. That is one of the things that I really enjoy about putting modules together. It's not why I started doing it, but boy, I have enjoyed the relationships and friendships that have been made since I've been building modules.
Okay, I have my own question, and this is going to seem girly, but it's a twist. Am I coming through? Okay. Romances. Who feels forced to put romances in their modules now because they're in such a high demand? Our module does not have a storyline for it. I am going to put in some manipulative flirting. However, and even as a female, I don't see it in our module, and it would be ridiculous, kind of like The Witcher sex scenes. And Does anybody feel forced to have the romances put in their modules now?
I think if you look on the forums, it's always a popular topic. You get lots of responses. So I think there's definitely an interest from the player's perspective. And, yeah, that does kind of then lead on to, you know, wanting to cater to that, I guess. But I think as long as it's an interesting interaction with an interesting companion, then it doesn't necessarily have to have the romance in there.
Anybody else? Go ahead.
I was going to say it's a tough pick. I mean, it takes so much time to put one in, but there is such a demand for it. It's like the litmus test for a module, it seems.
Well,
I don't feel obligated to do it, although, ironically, in the last module I put out, Tamakin, it starts out, you wake up with a hangover, basically. You don't remember much of anything, and you wake up in bed with this beautiful woman, and, you know, you wind up getting chased out of town, and it kind of propels the action forth. It was kind of an idea that popped into my head a couple of years ago, and it seemed like an interesting, kind of funny way to get things rolling. And a romance is possible. It's not the point of the whole module, but it kind of gets it started.
I just think it adds to the personal part of the playing. I mean, I enjoyed it in MOTB and the OC, except for I wish I would have picked different characters, but it's just something that I enjoy, so that's why I want to include it in mine, but I think it has to be well done to be successful.
Well, I agree. Yeah. I enjoy the romances. I really do. If they're well done, if they're not forced, and they don't seem like a really bad porn. However, in the OC, I didn't even know there was a romance until I'm up on this wall with Casavir, seriously. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. However,
that one was not...
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I agree with you. That one wasn't written well at all.
Funny, Kevin. Well, you know, I played HNC, Harp and Chrysanthemums, and I liked the progression of the romance in that one. And there have been several modules I've played with really good romances, and then there's been some that have been really bad. Our module, however, really, I can't even find a place for it. And I'm a woman, and, you know, I should be able to pull out the Lifetime channel, and I just can't find it.
I think more than romances, it's strong interaction with your companions. And I think interaction with companions should be front and center in a module that you're playing. And the ones that I tend to enjoy most really do that. Thinking about Dark Avenger that I already mentioned, that companions are right up there. They're essential to what's going on. And Harp and Chrysanthemum, that I'm sure everybody's talked quite a bit about or has played, the relationships with the companions are right in the center of what's going on, and it breathes life into the story and makes it feel very real.
So I definitely agree with that. I mean, the interaction with other people and making you feel like you actually make a difference in other people's life, not just the task you are performing and all that. Personally, when it comes to romance, I believe if people are to put it in, you have to plan it from the start. Because if you go through and halfway your module, you figure out, okay, there's such a high demand now for romance, I have to put something in, which often just falls out short and being a bit ridiculous. So I don't know, the original question was about pressure to put romance in just because of demand, but I believe most people, such as us, will decide whether or not the module they are creating actually fits having some romantic interaction.
I don't feel obligated to put romance in the module I'm creating. I'd rather have some stronger interaction with the NPCs and the companions that you're creating, as opposed to putting in romance because that's what the community wants to see.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
for the most part, you know, us guys are kind of at a disadvantage. You know, Valentine's is coming up, but that's not a testament to how bad we are at romance. I don't know what is. We're not made to write that stuff. We need help.
Oh, I hate Valentine's Day. Way too much pressure.
Okay, let's have a contest for the best Valentine's module.
Oh, yeah, I'd lose. I would. I'd so lose. I'd rather see some twisted, dark story plot than a romance any day. Did everybody...
I was going to say, I liked Lorf's take on a Christmas module, Winterval. That was quite good fun. But I'm not sure I can see where, a Valentine's one coming out as well.
Maybe Halloween.
I was planning on doing that last year, but it got away from me.
Yeah, Jason Roy was actually planning on doing the same thing, and time ran out for him.
Well, what's Ravenloft but one gigantic Halloween module?
Yeah, really. Jason, are you still with us? Yep, there he is. Does anybody else have anything they would like to discuss? Anybody from the audience that would like to maybe say something?
Actually, as we wait for potential questions, I would like to know if anyone has looked into the Witcher toolset. I know that it's not out quite yet, but it is getting close, and I'm quite excited about seeing what they are able to do with it, and that what we are able to do with it. I don't know if anyone's read up on it.
I haven't even heard of that yet.
I guess I'm just the only one interested in that.
I've heard of it, but not looked into it. I've just been... This today I downloaded the Keep of the Borderlands demo for Temple of Elemental Evil as another mod for another game, and that looks like it's a pretty amazing bit of work they put in there.
Kevin, you had another question?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
One of the questions I have for everybody is... I'm having difficulty trying to decide when an area is done. How much detail is too much detail?
It's never done. There's just a release that you hit. You can always go back and put a little more shading, add a couple more placeables, take this out and put a trigger around it. I don't think you can ever really be done.
That's what I was figuring, so I thought I'd bring it out
there. I'm a perfectionist. It drives me nuts. I keep going back and back.
Yeah, Dave does have a good question there. What things slow down an area most?
I'm not sure I'm too qualified to talk on area design, but I think one thing to be wary of is making areas bigger than they need to be. And it always helps to put a few sort of placeables or characters in just to get a feel for scale and to err on the smaller side, I think, and then ending up with a huge area that you're just filling up with stuff you don't need.
I'd strongly agree on the size. It's always smaller than you think you need it, and then half that size again, it seems. And I'm always trying to make things as small as I can, and then I go check them out, and they're still larger than they need to be or should be. So it's, even though I'm cognizant of that, I always have to keep reminding myself, keep it small.
Does that include interior areas or just exterior areas?
I'd say both.
Well, I've always been concerned. This is Jay. I've always been concerned because we looked at it as far as the size of that. If you look at the server memory requirements or client memory requirements with certain areas, that's why I think we haven't seen a lot of persistent worlds coming online as much, is because it takes a honking machine to keep all that stuff in memory. Have you guys run into that barrier as you're developing single-player or multiplayer modules?
That's exactly why I jumped ship from the PW idea, was the fact that coming from a Jaga seamless area, 500 areas strung together, you just can't do that with Neverwinter Nights 2. I mean, you're limited to how many areas you can have, so that's exactly why I went back to single player.
Another question. Okay, go ahead, Eva.
No, I was just going to say for myself, I just have a couple exteriors, and then mostly all interior. Because of the same thing, but my exteriors are a bit big, but it's just because it's a whole town that people can explore, like Red Larch is a big town, and stuff like that, but that's the main exterior for the whole chapter one.
You know, yeah, I had those... Sorry, Eva, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Tony. Say, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ernie. After Ernie, Tony.
I was going to say on my blog, I posted a question that's somewhat similar, which is it's not slowing down the area, but how large is too large for a module or a project? I mean, the one I'm working on now is just going to be enormous. I mean, you start working with a few hacks, you get a couple of modules tied together in a campaign, and, you know, you could be pushing a gig without, if you've got a sizable project pretty quickly. And what is too big? What are people willing to download? And you have to start thinking about that as well. And I posted that question. That the response it seemed to get was people didn't mind, and it's just kind of expected with Neverwinter Nights 2. But I don't know if anybody else has thoughts on that. I mean, how big is too big from a file size standpoint?
I actually think that at the time where we already have such huge files, how many megabytes you download doesn't really matter. Of course, with the fact that people do have very decent internet connections, and most people are able to be on 24/7, and therefore it's just a matter of time getting things down. And when it comes to the whole part about hard drive space, obviously that's another question, but I do believe if the space is utilized, as in the content you put into it actually adds to the experience of the module, no one will care whether or not they are downloading 20 megabytes or, 1.5 gigs, in my personal opinion, though. So, yeah.
Tony, you had a question? I'm sorry, Ava.
I was just going to say, isn't it an issue of actually playing the game? It's not the download, but playing it when it's large memory, like large areas. There's some areas that I would love to download and use, but in the tool set, I can't even load it on. It's too big. So, that's when you need to have them a bit smaller. So, that's
what I think that was the initial question I asked about the file size, just kind of a side issue. But it seems like a lot of trees and a lot of grass are a killer in addition to the size of the area. It seems to have a big impact.
Oh, okay, that was a question. Personally, I believe detail should be added to whatever the module maker wants to feature in an area. You can't, when it's all about creating an illusion when it comes to huge areas and so on. You have to guide the player anyway and add details to where you want the player to go, basically, because people will draw to details. So to keep the size down, and I believe when it comes to the amount of items you put in an area, people would mind. So just be smart about where you put your detail. Okay, someone's asking a question.
Go ahead, Tony.
Okay. While Tony, we're seeing Tony comes back or not, I would like to add to this a little bit. Have you guys noticed that the original OC for Neverwinter Nights 2 is actually broken up into separate mod files to reduce the amount of space? And if so, is there any documentation, or have you tried any of that to see how they're doing the transition between the different mod files?
I've actually been kind of afraid to do the whole campaign with multiple module things. I know it's the most logical choice, especially when using custom content, because I've kind of trying to avoid using the override, not avoid using hack and actually loading things directly in the module, which works fine on the initial load, but the minute you save and try to reload a save game, that stuff isn't loaded, so you kind of miss it. So if you're using lip flappers or custom VFX, they're just missing. I think campaigns would be the most logical way to go with that, but you have to have a lot of forethought and planning on how you're going to organize it before you just jump in.
Yeah, I mean, with the campaign I'm working on, I've certainly learned more since the release of Chapter 1, and I'm going to have to go back and rejig that chapter sort of to make it all backwards compatible, I think, for the rest of the series. It does need quite a bit of planning.
Okay, Tony asked, what does everyone think about the current situation with custom content development in Neverwinter Nights 2? Maybe Johnny would like to lead that off.
I can't really answer for everyone else when it comes to that question, but I mean, with the tools that are out there, custom content development isn't really all that difficult to do anymore.
And I have seen a lot of great stuff being put out there. So, yes, I do actually believe it has taken up a bit. And I'm hoping to see a lot more.
It was getting a little more specific, thinking in particular about models, creatures, and placeables.
Right, yeah. Currently I'm actually working on a few NPCs which will be added into the module as more or less creatures. And with the granny tools and the exporting tools, it isn't really all that difficult. It just takes some time to get to used to the tools that Obsidian has actually provided us. So I'm thinking as more people get comfortable with it, we will see a lot more of both placeables and creatures. The only thing that people might be having an issue with is the amount of detail that goes in to the Nomad Knights 2 engine rather than what went into the Nomad Knights 1.
Anybody else?
Has anybody gone into looking into trying to add custom UI mods to your module? I know that a couple of the Persistent Worlds have done that, the DMFI tools do that. I'm wondering if anyone's looked into using that for anything.
I have not.
I am too afraid to.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, I've heard that one, I think.
And I have no idea what you're talking about, so I'm not going to answer.
Well, I think the challenge is like with the DMFI tools, that you have to actually import that into your module so that it only loads when your module is being played and not loads all the time. So, I mean, I think that's where the challenge is. So.
Oh, I do have a question, actually, and I cannot remember which module I played recently, and it might have been in one of y'all's. Oh, there's the Southern coming out of me. Somebody had a module where the only time your alignment shifted, yeah, Jay, you're funny. The only time your alignment shifted is when you did something that opposed your alignment, which I found absolutely brilliant. Instead of racking up all these points of chaotic or good or evil that you already were aligned to, only alignment shifts that you would get is if you did something that opposed to them. I personally don't care for alignments because I think they're too black and white, but I thought this was a great system.
That actually sounds pretty cool. I don't know what module that was, but if that was in place, how could you ever get more evil or more good? Were you stuck at your initial mold because it couldn't go past that wall, or because it could only shift when you opposed what you were?
It opposed what you were, when you did something, like say you play chaotic good, which is like my trademark. I play chaotic good with everything. It's a personality trait. However, if you did shift beyond what you were, it would realign back for you, when you did something that was towards your alignment, it would shift back to your initial start. Which I thought that was amazing myself.
I have encountered that in some Persistent Worlds, and the bigger issue that you run into with it, not just from a scripting or module development area, but just from a player perspective, is once you go so far with it, it'll stop allowing you to add feats and level as what you said you were because everything's not going to the correct alignment. You actually have to go back and correct that before you can continue adding feats to it.
Alignment shifts have changed my alignment. I was a paladin, and I couldn't play a paladin anymore because I went to chaotic good. Yet, I reiterate, character, personality there. But, I think it's a Neverwinter Nights 1 module, actually, and it is Tiberius's, what's it called? I actually have it bookmarked here. But I found it to be quite amazing. Yeah, Tiberius. I think he works for Ossian now. And it's called Salaron's Gambit. It is a 5-part series. Yeah, that's it.
I think alignment's definitely based on individual taste. Some people like the bump, some people don't. It'd be nice if there was a universal toggle at the beginning where you could ask a player, do you want alignment shifts or not, so they could turn it off if it annoys them.
Yeah, I find them to be way too black and white, because, and then there's times where they don't give you an option to actually follow your true alignment. Either you end up getting some lawful good or evil, and there's like the no gray area for the other, and it just keeps knocking your alignment everywhere, no matter, you don't have a choice.
It also forces a player to read. You can't just click to continue a conversation. You really have to read it, what you're doing or saying, and how that would affect the character that you've perceived to be.
Yes, I do agree. Clicking through, well, first off, you would miss too many things. I'm really particular. I mean, I click on everything. I read everything possible. You know how you get that thing where it says that there's nothing of interest here? I see that a lot because, well, I click on stupid stuff. Does anybody have a problem with dialogue options and repercussions from your answers? Because this is the only problem I'm having with writing, is creating enough dialogue options and setting up different scenarios for your options.
Oh, yes. That's definitely one that we come across all the time.
You can use the copy and the insert link and make things a loop, but it can tend to get really messy, and then you have to go back and reread a conversation 20 times to make sure you don't have any broken nodes. It gets complicated really quick trying to have multiples of different situations.
I'm attempting to have, at the very least, two options, up to four. However, I do have some situations where you will actually miss part of the game if you decide to play a certain way, which I did that intentionally because, you know, if they go on and they say, someone on the vault says, okay, well, you know, this and this was really cool, but the next person's like, well, wait a minute, I didn't see that. I'm doing this intentionally. If you don't play a certain way, it's not going to trigger more events. It'll go on to different events. Well, our module is going to actually have custom stuff like that, so the diplomacy, the intimidate, the bluff isn't going to be a part of the problem.
The problem I've found is when I want to get the companions to chip in with a comment based on whatever the PC ends up saying, and then trying to work in the different things that they might say depending on that response, that takes up quite a bit of time when you're writing out the conversations.
Exactly. Also, I'm trying to do the flair of what the typical type of person would answer, and the dialogue options, like, okay, someone wants to be a snot, someone wants to be law-abiding, somebody wants to be evil, and I'm trying to give all these options, but as I said, we're not doing the typical alignment, and we're also not doing the typical buff, intimidate, diplomacy. So the effect is not going to be the same.
I think it's appreciated when there's so much flexibility in dialogue, and what you're doing really seems to have an impact. I think people can sense that when they're playing a module, and they really appreciate that. Kind of a broader question. I mean, we're talking about dialogue quite a bit, but if we talk about story even broader, where do people get ideas for story? And how do you go about constructing your stories? I mean, do people outline them? Do they have just one nugget of the story that kind of gets their imagination going? A lot of different ways to build the story. What does everybody do to develop their stories?
When it comes to our projects, we are rather fortunate for our two people working on this story in the same on the same roof. So we sit down and discuss it, knowing a bit about where we're starting and where we're planning to go, and then just outline it from there. I find it to be really great to have another person in on your story to be able to discuss things, because you will get respond from this person immediately, and therefore get a sense on how this is working.
for other people as well, even though something is says cool and seems to be working very well, when it's in your head doesn't necessarily say that it's a good idea. So that has helped us a lot to develop the story and where it's going, and also that's something we will continue doing as we go into further modules.
That's a good point. When you're writing solo, you've got everything in your head. You know the whole story, the beginning, end, and middle, and giving out a little piece at a time, you're not sure if you're conveying what you need to convey. You don't know if the character is with you in the story as much as they should be, or if you're filling in the gaps from what you intimately know. So it's nice to bounce it off a third party or someone else to make sure that the right disclosure is there at the right time.
I was fortunate to already have a subject to be based off of. Johnny Ree has had this module in his head for like 3 or 4 years. And I totally pushed him into getting started. And I came up with a prelude based off of his original story. And I kind of ran with it. He let me have creative freedom. I was having a blast in a really... The bantering and the conversations going on in my head is just hilarious. But I do have the opportunity to bounce it off of him and let him either read, or I verbally read it to him, and he can. I have that extra set of ears to listen to see, yeah, that sounds right, or that sounds really good. I know that not everybody has that opportunity, and I'm glad that I do, because I constantly need the reassurance. But Jason Roy, who is helping us with some area builds and some music, which he really should say hi to everybody. Donnie is doing all the custom content. I am doing the writing. And Ernie Noah did have the wonderful, wonderful patience to read through my story and my dialogue to give me any tips. And Jason has read it, so this is my first time out. And my biggest fear, truly, is grammar and spelling errors, because I go on the vault and I comment and I make my votes and everything else, and the number one thing I see is people complaining about, oh, shut up, Jay, people complaining about spelling and grammar.
I did have the privilege to read what you had written, Michelle, and it really is excellent. The module is going to be fantastic when it comes out. I'm really looking forward to it.
I don't know about you guys, but for myself, I had a main storyline, and it sort of grew from there. All of a sudden, I'd have a side quest, and I thought, hey, that sounds good. Maybe I'll add them as a companion, or I'll have a... Like, I don't know. I just found that the story got a lot bigger than when I first planned it, just as a kidnapping of parents and a assassination attempt. Sorry, I can't pronounce my words. And then it just grew from there. Does anyone else have that, where they'll just all of a sudden have a storyline and it kind of expands from there?
Sometimes. I've done some modules like that. I mentioned, you know, Tamak, and I kind of had what seemed like a funny or an interesting way to start that. And that's partly a paper and pencil conversion, but the paper and pencil module is really dry. It's just a dungeon crawl. There's no backstory. There's no nothing. And I kind of wrapped it in the story that I was describing before. And other ones, I've, you know, really outlined them and had it really well developed and had a pretty elaborate story in my head before I even started working on modules. So I've done it differently depending upon the project.
I know I haven't stayed as faithful as I should, but I found having a design document to be invaluable, just having stuff kind of sketched out for you ahead of time, so you have a roadmap of the beginning, middle, end, but the details don't come right away. They definitely get filled in as you go.
Yeah, design documents are great. You know, and I work in IT, and whenever I do programming, boy, I mean, I document everything before we start. I'm not quite as disciplined at home, and I know that's valuable, and I certainly couldn't argue with that, but I tend to relax and just be a little looser with things at home. Although I do have some good notes and nothing quite as complete as I do professionally. But it's a good idea to have a roadmap.
I'm probably quite odd because I picked inspiration from a cheesy heavy metal song for mine. But that was just a launching point, really. And then I think the main inspiration for me has just been my experience DMing D&D over the years for my friends, and
picking bits from various modules, wrapping it all in together, and various side quests that have come up during that.
Yeah, I'm an old school D&D player. That's where it comes from for me primarily.
Yeah, I get a lot of ideas from like watching the History Channel and like Discovery Channel and all, anything from like old civilizations and creation myths down to something like the Loch Ness Monster. I just keep a little text file of ideas. I'll find a way to adapt it, and I'm like, you know, I can make that work, and I go throw it in the text file and then draw upon it later.
Okay, before we wrap it up, it is poor Duncan probably has to get ready for work soon, and
I should be getting up in 4 hours' time, I think.
Ah, you can get a nap.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for coming. I do apologize for all the technical mishaps. I don't know what happened. I really don't. I think Skype kind of freaked out when everybody was trying to log in at the same time. Duncan, Ava, you know what? I'm looking at these and I'm forgetting your real names. Nell Answer, Wrath, all of you. Who did I forget? Ernie? I can't forget Ernie. I want to thank you all very much for coming tonight. I really enjoyed myself. I didn't really think I was going to get very involved in the conversation, but I did find in my head a few things I was wondering about. And I've played some of your modules already and enjoyed them greatly. And I'll express this like I do at the end of all of my interviews. When you get in game, you download, go in and vote and comment. And if you guys would like to say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, all. And thanks for arranging this.
Yeah, thank you. You did a good job there.
It was a blast.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad, other than technical issues, you guys enjoyed yourselves. I'm sorry that Ronnie couldn't stay. He was having so many problems. I have to get a solo interview with him when he releases his module, along with some of you other ones, so be expecting it.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody, too, for coming in and doing this. This is a great, especially the guys that had to stay up late or get up in the middle of the night to host this. This is something, as a part of the podcast, we will be doing more in the future. Probably once a quarter or so, we'll get a group together, just have a talk, and turn it into part of a show. So I thank you for helping us getting this kicked off and help us work some kinks out.
Yeah, I think we'll try Ventrilo and IRC chat instead, because Ventrilo's... Go ahead.
I was going to say, you mean we were the guinea pigs?
Yeah, you are the guinea pigs.
At least we are treated humanely. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no chemical sprays or anything like that. You won't have any after ill effects, I don't think.
Well, that'll be next time.
Disclaimer, I'm not making promises. At least we weren't polled.
I made my save versus Skype cavern. That's hilarious. You have to use a D20, right?
We'll have an interview in our next episode with Doma Soto, a.k.a. Malarinda. Malarinda, yes. Michelle got to have an interview with her, and hopefully... we'll find out all we can about Bishop's romance, I think is what they talk about in the interview.
Right. And maybe we'll have to get a email update on why it's not up for the running for the words talk.
And you're not going to believe who we're going to have after that.
Okay, who? I don't believe you.
Michelle and I had the privilege of interviewing the legend, the one and only Adam Miller.
Really?
Yes.
I don't believe it.
Okay, fine. Just wait until you hear it.
and well, let's see. Were you serious? And could Michelle stay on track?
Actually, I just lurked and listened.
That's the best thing. And the color man is
recorded and recorded the backup for her, which actually we needed because after she got done, her file was gone.
Oh, nice.
So if I hadn't have been there, that would have been bad.
Cool, that sounds like fun.
Okay, so I guess that's about it, Dave. I appreciate you setting in at the last minute.
Hey, no worries.
Hope we didn't get you in too much trouble.
No, I don't think so. And actually, it looks like my kid's probably just done brushing his teeth, so.
All right.
But that's right.
So until next time.
Get in game.
And level up.
And level up.
And level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast. Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2008.
So I've always wanted to eat to surf. So you live to surf. So you eat so that you can live, so that you can surf.
Yeah, basically, what is it? People had surf to live, or all the live to surf and all that crap. It's like, well, that was all taken. Well, eat to surf. And actually, I like eat to surf better anyway.
I think you're one of our longest listeners, dude.
Well, of course, I was number one. I was first email reply or something like that?
I think so.
Yeah. That's because I got nothing else to do. So am I the biggest loser? Is that it or what? I'm the biggest fan.
Ooh, I left one of them out of here. Hold on a second.
Uh-oh.
Let me switch over here. Hold on. I'm sorry. Bear with me.
No. I'm not gonna. I'm gonna just go
not
on.
Not gonna do it. Not gonna do it.
I'll just. When we have dates for these, we'll post them on the website and in the forums. You already said that.
I already said that.
You skipped. You must have wrote this.
I must have wrote that.
I say we can all talk like this. In April.
Oh, okay. Also.
You're with me again?
Okay, I'm back. Hold on. Okay. Let's see, did he say that was in April?
I don't know. This is all a conversation March. In your head.
It is. It really is. So,
yeah.
Next week we're going to have an interview with Doma Soto, a.k.a. Merlindarin.
Yeah, I can't say that.
We're going to have an interview with
in the notes. I'll try to say the name. It's Mer. Let's see.
It's almost like Merlin. Merlin. Yeah, it's like a female Merlin.
Melirinda. That's what I'd say.
Melirinda.
Melirinda.
Melirinda. Okay. Good. So.
Want me to go with that? I'll.
Go ahead, you say it. Go say it. And next
is
episode.
Is it after the Domo? Right?
Yeah. So next episode. Domo Soto. I guess is her real name.
Okay.
DOMISOTTO.
In our next episode, we'll have Domo Soto. In our next episode, we'll have an interview with Domo one more time. I'm rewriting it in my head.
It's harder than it sounds, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.